welcome to the Fiber Muse podcast. This is your host, Frenchie, knitwear designer and design coach behind Araha Knits, where I empower fiber artists to transform their yarn so they can manifest more joy, healing, connection, and creativity into their lives one stitch at a time. My work as a knitwear designer focuses on exploring the intersection of the four aspects of making, self-care, self-discovery, self-expression, and selflessness with my journey of making sense of my multicultural identity. And on this podcast, I'll be documenting this journey through interviews with crafters of color, members of the LGBTQ community, and other underrepresented communities in the industry to highlight their stories and learn how their making intersects with their identity. Fiber Muses, and welcome back to a brand new episode of the Fiber Muse podcast. I'm so excited to introduce you to today's guest, Tina Say of Tina Say Knits. It has been quite a bit of a week this past week, but talking to Tina has definitely been very therapeutic. Tina is a knitwear designer based in Detroit, Michigan. After studying knitwear design in college, she fell in love with the use of different fibers, colors, and textures to create her own fabric. By day, she designs on an industrial knitting machine for the sporting goods industry. By night, she spends most of her time creating hand-knit designs. Tina tries to design wearable pieces for any wardrobe while still creating intriguing designs to keep the process interesting. And you'll find all of her social media links and her Ko-fi account in the show notes below. So without any more further ado, here is Tina. Hello, Tina, and welcome to the Fiber Muse podcast. So happy to have you on as a guest today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, let's just get right into it and let's introduce you to our audience. So Tina, who are you? Why should people care about you? No, just kidding. Who are you?
What do you do? So my name is Tina. I do hand knitting pattern designs by night. And during the day, I have a full-time job designing for industrial knitting machines using plastic yarns.
Oh, plastic yarns?
Yes.
Oh, wow. What's that like?
It's very, very technical, very specific, where every single millimeter makes a difference. Mm. Mm-hmm.
What kind of things do you make? You probably, can you hear the cat?
Yeah.
I know, he's like full force. Like, you know, I need to be on this podcast too. Anyway, so focus on you.
We make lacrosse equipment specifically. So if anybody knows anything about lacrosse, there is this stick with this head and it has a pocket in it, and that pocket is what I make.
Okay, so that's what you use the plastic for to create that.
Exactly.
In there. Oh, that is really
exactly.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you studied knitwear design in college. What was that like? I didn't know you could study that.
Yeah, so it is actually, on a broader sense, it was just fashion design, and then I specialized in knitwear. Mm. There was a time where you could pick whether or not you wanted to do evening wear, sportswear, knitwear, and children's wear. And I picked knitwear because I wanted to be able to create my own fabrics. Mm-hmm. So that's just where I went. And it was very technical, which is something that I'm pretty good at. I like figuring things out and laying things out and all that stuff. Kind of like engineering in a way, but not as crazy as engineering.
So how has studying knitwear design helped inform you for, I mean, obviously when you study it, it helps a lot, but how has it, like learning it in a technical and in an academic sense or whatever, how has that helped inform you when you started publishing patterns on Ravelry?
Actually, it's two very different things.
Ah.
What I studied in school is not at all like the hand knitting world at all. There's a lot of layovers and overlaps, but what we do in hand knitting, this terminology is totally different than what it is in machine knitting.
Okay. So mm-hmm. When you studied knitwear design, it was specifically for machine knitting.
Basically, yes. Because when we communicate in the fashion industry with, let's say, factories, it needs to be machine knitting terms because a lot of people don't produce hand knits, mass produce hand knits. So it's all machine usually.
Oh, that's fascinating. Wow. So how would the design process differ from a machine versus hand knitting?
Machine knitting is a lot of, there's a computer program that's involved in it. Kind of like Photoshop, but very specific to functionalities of the knitting machine. So I spent a lot of time learning about the program itself and how it interacts with the knitting machine and how my concepts relates to the program, which then relates to how it comes out of the knitting machine.
Okay, I think I understand.
it's a lot. It's definitely a lot to process. It's a different world than hand knitting altogether.
I'd say, wow. Mm-hmm. And so when did you start picking up hand knitting or designing hand knits?
Well, I learned how to knit when I was young from my grandmother, and I stopped knitting for a while after that. And then when I was in college and learning about knitwear, it was just natural to start hand knitting again and just getting the feel for textures and yarns and different fibers. And when you do machine knitting, there's a lot of setting up, there's a lot of getting things prepared, and it was easier for me to get a concept onto needles for hand knitting, just to get the idea and the concept to see, like, is this going to work, before I had to set up this whole entire thing for machine knitting. So it was kind of an easy transition from hand knitting to knitwear, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I didn't start writing knitting patterns until almost 2 years ago. So it's fairly new to me. In the past, I used to just design and knit at the same time. I didn't write notes down. I didn't write anything down, and I just went for it. And when I found out about writing knitting patterns, I was like, "Oh, this is completely very wordy. lots of math for sure." But I think it's nice to be able to share my designs through writing these patterns with people to knit my designs.
Cool. So how many patterns have you published on Ravelry since starting about 2 years ago?
Oh, I just looked at this morning, actually. I think I've published 14 or so.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 14 or so. Mm-hmm.
That's a really good portfolio. And then like last month you had released a pattern that, what kind of construction was it, like modular?
Yes. Yep, modular knitting with garter stitch and some striping or solid. Yep.
Yeah, when I saw the design, I was like, "Well, that's going to give Stephen West a run for his money, because it had that kind of feel to it." But with your special like type of touch to it, yeah. I've never tried modular knitting. I guess I'll try that one day soon.
That I wasn't planning on writing a pattern for, but when I started sharing about it, everyone was asking for one, and I was like, okay, let me try to figure out how to put this.
Yeah.
I did not write anything down for it, because it was purely for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I started it out as going to be a shawl. And I was like, oh, I don't really wear shawls that much. Maybe I'll make a blanket. And then I was like, oh, I have enough knit blankets. And I was like, maybe I'll make something to wear. And so that's how it ended up there.
Oh, I couldn't imagine trying to rewrite a pattern like that, like a modular pattern, and then try to recreate it from memory.
Exactly. And that's why I wrote a formula instead of a pattern for it. So that, I mean, the joy that I got from it was being able to knit and create at the same time, instead of having to dissect every single knit one, purl one. Like, it got very, when I started to write it down as a pattern, I got really bored.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't like this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, you know what? I think everyone wants to create their own special piece. Maybe if I wrote it as a formula, people would make it their own instead of having to follow rules or something like that. So
I like that.
I went with the formula. Yeah.
That's cool. So when you're designing, I guess you kind of already answered this already, but what would you say is your go-to object or go-to like type of project?
Like for hand knitting?
Yeah, hand knitting. Yeah, when I say designing, we're going to be talking about
hand knitting.
The hand knitting.
Yeah.
The night job.
I like garments, creating garments, because it's just I want to be able to wear it more.
Mm-hmm.
I like designing shawls too, because it's kind of like a flat canvas and there's not a lot of math. When I don't feel like doing math, shawls are perfect.
I feel ya.
Exactly. And then when I really want to design something to wear, then I go towards garments usually. Mm.
Yeah, I totally feel you on the shawl thing. That's like one of the reasons why I design shawls as much as I do, because I don't have to worry so much about the math. Because when it comes to garments, there's grading and, there's a specific math for the one size, and then you have to do the grading for the rest of the other sizes. And that takes mm-hmm. quite a while to do.
Yes. Yeah. And I don't want to get it wrong. And it's like, there's different like points of the garment that you have to remember to grade. And it's like, you have to remember all those points. And it's like, okay. It's a lot of work, a lot of brain power for sure.
Yeah. So a couple of months ago, sometime last year, I had actually reached out to you to ask you to be on the podcast, because I wanted to talk to more creatives of the designers of color about if their heritage or their identity plays a role in their designing. And I know in your case that you said that really wasn't a factor, but during that time between when I talked to you first and now actually having the interview, you've become a really, I'll start saying prominent name in the industry based on like the conversations that's been going on for the couple of months, you know? Mm-hmm. What has been your experience or your perspective about that? That made sense.
I try to look at the positives. There is quite a lot of positive coming from all the conversations that are happening. First of all, I've been finding a lot of people who look like me, who are also knitters, who I in the past have not seen around Instagram or the knitting community. Mm-hmm. And the conversations that are coming up and people standing up for each other and sharing their stories and saying, hey, I've had the same experience as you and you're not alone. And that was very empowering and mm-hmm. very positive that we can all be in this space together and lift each other up.
Mm-hmm.
As also like just connecting with people who are not part of my heritage and be able to learn about them and how their creative work is done because of maybe their heritage, like you,
mm-hmm.
How the work that you've been doing has been amazing. And I've learned so much just seeing your designs and you talking about your background and just learning about different people. There are a lot of negatives as well. Having to constantly defend yourself as a person of color, as your position of wanting to dismantle racism and try to show people that we need more inclusivity and how that looks and what that means, and just dealing with defensiveness or people who don't understand or see it and are kind of pointing fingers or calling us bullies and things like that just for speaking up. Like, those are the negatives, and they exist. I'm not surprised they exist. A lot of people have been dealing with that kind of stuff for way longer than the conversation that's been happening in the past 2 months. But I think the more we talk about it, the more we lift each other up. I think hopefully soon, or later, maybe not in our generation, but the generations after us won't have to deal with this anymore.
Hmm. Yeah, it's kind of, it's a little exhausting to think that these conversations have been going on for 2 months at like this level, and
right,
it's still going strongly, and it's just like every week there's something that pops up that's just like, I'm so
here
tired.
We go again.
Yeah, here we go again. So tired, and it's just. But I definitely agree with you. Like the positive, like even though the negatives, I mean, they've definitely been emotionally exhausting. Everybody buy Tina a coffee. do you have a coffee? Is it a coffee Ko-fi account or a coffee account?
I don't know. I actually only learned about it 2 months ago.
Okay, I'm gonna call it a Ko-fi. Yeah, yes. Everybody buy Tina a Ko-fi, a coffee to Ko-fi. I'll put the link in the show notes. Yeah, she should give her all the coffee. But what was I saying? Oh, the negatives, just being so exhausted. And, you know, like these past 2 months, like I'm not much of a crier, but I've like cried at least once in January and at least once in February.
Yes.
Which is like a new record for me. And it's just like, this is exhausting, but definitely the positives, like you said, being able to find, okay, I'm not sure if I'm able to find many Polynesian knitters yet. I found a few designers, but I'm just like, come on, where are you? I need to find more.
Yeah.
But definitely.
You should create the hashtag.
Maybe
that's how you find them.
Okay, thank you. I might actually do that. Yeah. But like just finding new people, and like for example, like I came across this account like a couple months ago from the hashtags, like for example, Cat Sandwich Fibers. I think that's her name.
Yes, yes.
Like, how did I not find her before? Her branding is just so perfect. It's like calling to me. So I'm just glad that she's getting the recognition that she deserves. And then we have also like Ocean by the Sea, her accounts, like all these brands, beautiful. All this beautiful yarns that I'm just like, I need to get this in my stash, like right away. And also just finding new designers as well. Mm-hmm. It's just like, we've had these people here in our community who would, who do really good work in terms of like what they're doing, like as a business and, you know, brand and stuff like that. I'm just like, how have I not heard of them before?
Right.
Like, why have they been hidden for so long? So it's just like, and you know, yourself included, it's just like, finally, you know, you did all this work. It's you're finally being recognized for it.
Right. Like, right. Right.
Yeah. So positives, definitely way the negatives in my case, but definitely practicing some self-care is really important.
Yes. 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 And I've been doing a lot of that this week because last week was very rough.
It was.
Yes, last week was very rough. So this week, even though with all the things that kept popping up, I was like, let me step back. Let me step back a little bit and still amplify everyone who's still talking about it and bringing everything to light. But me, I was like, I need to not engage as much this week because I can't handle the attacks this week. I every time I say something, I feel like there is a potential for backlash by whoever, and having to mentally prepare for that is always very, very disturbing
and exhausting, I'll say. Before, you know it's just like, I could put something up, and now because you're such a strong voice in the industry, it's just like, don't read, like I don't want to read the comments anymore.
Right. Posts. Exactly. You gotta be, it's like, post something and put my phone down for 2 hours or 3 hours just in case someone's going to like blast something at me, and then pick it up and be like, here we go.
Yeah.
Read everything and respond to things and stuff like that. Yeah.
So here's a question. As opposed to me not asking questions before. What have your best self-care practices been like? So I think this could be important for those listening, for, you know, especially for makers of color who have been also participating in the conversations, and they're probably feeling exhausted and feeling really vulnerable.
Yes. Definitely putting down the phone is very, or any source of social media whatsoever is helpful. What I do actually is just watch a bunch of comedies just to laugh it off and kind of watch something stupid so my brain could kind of just turn into mush and not think too much. I have my 3 cats that I cuddle with. So that helps. I try to remember the positives. I really do. And I'm personally quite a pessimistic person. A lot of people don't know that, but I tend to think of only the negatives. And I'm learning now that I can't do that anymore because I would just destroy myself if I did that. So definitely remembering why I'm doing this, remembering like, this is not going to change overnight. This is not going, this might not even change in my lifetime. But I'm trying to do this so that my children, my children's children, all the young people in this world right now will not experience things that we're all experiencing as a person of color.
Mm.
As a person with a different religion, as a person who is LGBTQ community, all that stuff, like to not have to be pigeonholed into this group and then be chastised for being part of that group and like all that stuff. So remembering why I'm doing this and then just remembering it's not going to be done in one night. I can't fix it all right now.
I wish you could.
Letting it go. I know. I really wish you could too. I know. It's like, can I just, but it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And I remind myself that.
But I want racism to be solved now. Like, I want us to pinpoint this post and be like, racism has been solved in this post.
I wish it was that easy. If it was that easy, it would have ended years ago.
Probably.
Years and years ago. But so many layers, so many levels to break down.
Yeah, it's definitely a lifelong journey, and it's definitely a case of progress over perfection. Like, definitely, we shouldn't expect ourselves, like, no matter if, like, you're a person of color or you're an ally, like, just to do our best, to listen to, you know, the voices who have been marginalized and just, you know, just do our best. That's the way that I'm approaching it, just doing our best. And properly apologizing when you hurt somebody. I think that's important.
Yes. And listening. I mean, I'm Asian. I'm Chinese American. I don't even know how Korean Americans are feeling. I don't even know how like other Indian Americans are feeling, or Indian Canadians or Chinese Canadians. Like, there's just so many layers, and I'm still learning a lot about other people as well, different groups of people. And it's like, you have to keep listening and learning. It's your story is just your story. You have to listen to other people's stories as well.
Yeah. So how do you hope to impact the fiber community with your work, and I guess also with your story?
Oh, I got into the pattern writing so that I can kind of contribute and be part of the community. That's one way that I'm doing it. I'm doing it because I need some way to express my creativity. In a way, the community is doing something for me by letting me into the space where people are actually knitting my designs, which was, I was like, maybe no one's gonna care, and I'm just putting this out there, and I'll see what happens. And the fact that people are making my designs is still mind blowing to me.
It's a cool feeling.
You're actually interested in this. I'm like, that's awesome. and you probably feel the same way as a creative person. You're putting a part of yourself out there. Every single piece is a part of you. It's an expression of who you are. And in a way, we kind of need some kind of validation in doing that. Like, yes, people like your stuff. Okay, good, great. I can keep going. I can just keep being a creative. So I think the patterns is a way for me to contribute to the community. I like to test knit for designers, even though I'm a designer myself. There's some designs where I'm just never going to dive into that technique. Like brioche, for instance, the one that I just finished doing for Knit Graffiti. Like, I love knitting brioche, but I have no interest in designing with a brioche stitch. I don't know why. I just have no interest in it. So test knitting is a great way to meet people and work on a project together, kind of like a knit along, but you're working towards helping this designer perfect something. What else? I feel like being able to tell everyone stories and my experience as an Asian American creative in a space where Asian Americans are not very much represented
mm-hmm.
In the community, saying, hey, you know, Asian Americans knit too, or Asians knit, or like, there's a lot of shame around made in China, or mm-hmm. you know, things that come from China. And I'm like, the reason why that exists is because companies who went to China to try to exploit the workers there to make these things, they're not the Chinese who decided to go over to China to exploit their own people. And so like, that's another story, but
yeah.
but a lot of these big companies who are producing in China are from other white countries. And there's so much rich history of textiles in China that people are just completely overlooking because they just think of China as mass producing cheap items. And that's not what the Chinese history is. There's so much rich fashion history, clothing history, embroidery, all that stuff. And I kind of want to help in exploring more of that, which I haven't done a lot of lately, but I want to keep exploring that and sharing that with people, that China does have a rich history of textiles. And I think people should hear about it more.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, China has been around, I mean, it's a very old country, and it's just yes. rich. Its history is so rich and just goes so deep. And yes. it's a shame that what it's known for now is for like being, you know, it's been exploited and things are just, you know, cheap and like what you just explained. So yeah, really yeah. interested to see how you'll bring that into your work. So as a Chinese American, do you ever feel like this push and pull between your two cultures, like between your two worlds? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yes. Yeah. All the time. Growing up, I didn't understand what that was, because at home, I was surrounded by Chinese, speaking Chinese everything, Chinese food, Chinese. My parents didn't speak English, so we spoke Chinese all the time. My grandparents didn't speak English, so back at home, it was all Chinese everything. And then I would go to school, and I went to public school in New York City, in Queens, and it was a lot of immigrant children as well, like myself, but they were mostly Hispanic or like something else, where I feel like I still didn't fit in. So I was like, I really want to learn Spanish. Like, when can I learn Spanish so I could communicate? Because they would just speak in Spanish with each other. And I was like, I really want to learn Spanish now. So then after that, I moved to New Jersey for middle school and high school. And I was surrounded by white people, and how to navigate that as a young person. And there was a lot of times where I would bring food to school. It was Chinese food, and I was embarrassed because people were like, what's that? It smells weird, looks weird. Like, what are you even eating? And there was a lot of times it was like, I actually don't know what I'm eating. I was like, I don't know how to explain this in English. I only know what it's called in Chinese. And so after that, I was like, I'm not bringing this to school anymore. Mom just make me sandwiches, which sucks. But now as an adult, I'm still trying to figure out a lot of the stuff when I was younger, what it means to me now. Like, things that I didn't understand when I was younger. And now I'm like, I'm not Chinese. I'm not American because I'm not white, because a lot of people associate Americans with being a white person.
Mm-hmm.
But when I go back to China, everyone says you're an American.
Yeah.
And they can tell instantly that I'm not a native Chinese person. And I was like, I don't understand. I'm speaking your language, yet you know that maybe you have an accent or something. But I just feel like I never belonged in either places. And I continue to feel that way.
Mm-hmm. I'm seeing more on TV now. When Crazy Rich Asians came out, I was so happy when I watched it. Before I watched it, I wasn't sure how I was gonna feel about the movie. I was mm-hmm. like, oh, this is gonna be bad. People are gonna stereotype us. People are gonna be like this, this, and this. And I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. And then I watched the movie and I was like, this is everything I needed it to be. Because mm-hmm. it actually explained a lot of how I felt as not from China and not quite American.
Yeah, there was a scene in the movie. Actually, I just watched it a couple days ago with my husband. He hadn't seen it mm-hmm. yet. But there's a scene in there where where the main character is talking to her mother, and she's like, of course they'll love me. I'm Chinese. They're Chinese. And her mother explains to her, you speak Chinese. You have a Chinese face. But mm-hmm. here, and she's pointing to her brain and her heart, her mind and her heart, you're different. Yeah.
Yes.
And I was like, ooh, I relate to that. Like, even though I'm not Asian.
Right.
I can still relate to that looking like it, but because of the place where I grew up, it's so very different.
Exactly.
And in the movie, they do point that out, like, you know, she has very American ideals of like, pursuing one's passion versus maybe what, you know, the mother was like against. No, we have to, what you should say, but like basically like do what's right for everybody or something like that. But
right. Do what's right for your family or like, to pass on the family, something very related to family honor,
mm-hmm.
very traditional mindset.
Yeah, for sure. For sure at the same time. But also like, just like whenever there's a movie that has like a minority in it, you always have that worry of like, are they going to stereotype us? Like, is this going to be a mm-hmm. well-written character? The advantage of having a movie where all the characters are diverse is that you have like a whole spectrum of different types of characters. And so that mm-hmm. way, maybe if one did feel a little bit stereotypical, at least there's like five others. You're like, okay, these are really good
characters. Right. Yeah. Exactly. It's like the movie showed very well that like, hey, we all look the same, but it's obvious that we're not all the same people. Mm-hmm. Like we all look the same. We get it. We get it. Okay. I understand. I get it. But we're not all the same people, and stop trying to make us seem like the same person over and over and over again. We all have different personalities. Us as human beings have very complex levels of a lot of different things. And it's like the fact that people still, it really blows my mind when people really just think you're this one list of things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you can be because that's how you look.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing to me that people still think that way.
Yeah, we're a little, I don't want to use the word rainbow because that's used for another computer, but inside we're just like a whole spectrum of things that make us who we are, and it's just more than one thing.
Mm-hmm. We're onions, like Shrek.
Oh, yeah. We have many layers.
All the layers, yeah.
And we make people cry, apparently.
And apparently people do make people cry.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for answering that question. It's just, I was just really curious to hear somebody else's perspective, because this is something that I feel all the time, that, you know, that tug and push and pull, mm-hmm. like not being enough of one thing.
Right.
Stuff. So thank you. I appreciate mm-hmm. that. So the last question, if you could say anything to the people listening to this interview, taking in this interview, what would it be?
It's okay to be afraid, but you have to get past that fear so that you can be a better you.
Mm.
And that goes with being a creative, that goes for speaking up about your truth, and that goes for everything, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I get a lot of questions like, oh, I don't think I could knit that. Or that looks very intimidating. And I'm like, you just gotta start. Just say, I'm gonna make one stitch and one stitch at a time and just keep going. And you're gonna surprise yourself with how much you can do. Mm-hmm. And
I've been afraid for so long about speaking up about being Chinese American, about racism, about microaggressions, things that I thought nobody would believe me, or like, oh, you're being dramatic, or you're being sensitive, or whatever. And I finally decided, you know, enough is enough. I can't be the only one. And I said what I said, and there was way more positive than what there was ever going to be negative. And to me, that shows that we are progressing. It's not going to be all at once, but it does show that we are making some progress. And all I had to do was get over a fear. And I think that applies to pretty much everything.
It does. Getting over fear. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do the scary thing first, get scared later. And like, you know, we mentioned before, progress over perfection.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And practice some good self-care.
Yes. Very good self-care.
Yeah. All really good, solid advice. Thank you so much, Tina. Where can people find you online?
I'm on Instagram, tina.say.knits. And I'm on Ravelry. My designer page is just Tina Say, T-S-E. And that's about it.
And you have a Ko-fi account, right?
Yes, I do. Yep.
Okay, I'm going to make sure to add that into the show notes as well.
Bye. I believe it's Tina Say Knits, I think.
Like your Instagram profile?
Yes, I believe so. Without the periods.
Okay. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Tina, for coming on today. I so appreciate having your voice here. It's been really great getting to know you over these past few months, because we've been chatting a lot through Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
It's been really great. Keep up the hard work.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Thank you to everybody for listening to the 5 Muse podcast. I will see you next time. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the 5 Muse podcast. I certainly hoped that you enjoyed the show. If you would like to support the show, then you can do so easily through our Patreon. Patreon is a platform that connects creators together with their fans and allows the fans a quick and easy way to support their favorite creators every month on a small budget. So for just $2 a month, you'll get early access to the 5 Muse podcast episode, plus exclusive access to any of the live recordings that I do for the show. You can go to www.patreon.com/arahnits to get signed up today. Thank you so much, and see you next time. Bye.